Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. Hey, welcome into Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a good day. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show. He is noted football man Kevin Fishbane from Fox 32, making her maiden voyage on this show. We will challenge her, and she'll be able to respond. The great Shea Pepper. Great to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Rich Campbell from the Bears Beat over at the Chicago Tribune. All right, so how was your day off the Bears Beat today?
Oh, it was nice, relaxing. Didn't have to worry about the Bears because they didn't lose today, right?
Yeah, that's good. I said it was nice to see these guys not at Hallis Hall, somewhere else in suits.
Right, the three of you are always up at Hallis Hall.
Yeah.
But this is the elephant in the room. It's Fox Watch, isn't it, Rich?
It is. And we know how the McCaskies operate. They wait till the end of the year here. And that feeling we had leaving Soldier Field on Sunday just felt like we're in for 7 weeks
of lame duck. That shouldn't happen.
It just felt like we're in for 7 weeks of lame duck. Now, here's my take on this whole thing. It was not difficult to envision a coaching change even before this game, because for Ryan Pace, he needs to ask himself, what can he do to get the absolute most out of Mitch Trubisky? That is his guy. That's the centerpiece of the whole thing. And I think we could all sit here and say, look, they probably can find a different coach to get the best out of Mitch. Just look at what the Rams have done, for example. Okay? But when you lose to the Packers, it goes above the GM, and you know how ownership feels about this. And if Ryan needs the go-ahead, if he needs the green light to make this change, you can understand how a game like Sunday brings into view everything that's gone wrong over the 3 years here, and it's a long list.
See, I look at this whole thing, and I think you got to pull the plug on this guy before the end of the season.
Because you don't want to get behind the eight ball with other teams.
Correct. There's an average of, I think, 7.2 jobs change hands every offseason. I don't want to be one of eight teams pulling the plug on their coach on Black Monday and then find out, oh, God, he's already kind of thinking he's going to this place, and he's already got two coordinators who said, if you get it, I'm going with you, you got my word. No, you pull the plug on him before the end of the season. You're transparent. You go, hey, John, thank you for your efforts.
Okay.
Here's your check. We appreciate everything you did. Now beat it, and then Ryan, transparent, can go out and start talking to people, not behind someone's back.
Here's one thing that I don't think the Bears have been all season or in John Fox's tenure or since I can remember is transparent. That is not something they have been, nor
do I think
they
will
be. I agree with you, but I just don't see that happening between now and the end of the season. That is not what the Bears have done. That's not how they operate. They're not transparent. And I think it would be a much different season and a different outcome, maybe if they had been a little bit more transparent with the fans.
It would be hollow, especially what you're looking for, Cap. But one thing I could see happening is if this losing continues, Christmas Eve, the Browns come to town. There's not going to be anybody in that stadium because the Bears are going to be bad, the Browns are bad.
And it's Christmas Eve.
It's Christmas Eve. If the McCaskies are there, they see an empty stadium, they see a loss to the Browns, maybe they do what we've seen teams do this, where they just fire the guy with one game to go, just to say they did it in the season. Again, it's a hollow thing to do. I don't necessarily think the McCaskies would do it, but that's the only way I see Fox not lasting the entire rest of the way.
Good point.
It's just not how the ownership works here, and they're gonna give him the time. And look, the one thing, too, is the players like John Fox, from what we've seen, from when we've been around. And not to say that if they moved him aside and put Vic in or something like that, they wouldn't keep playing hard. It's a lot of young players. But I think that the ownership and Ryan Pace might see they wouldn't want to, you know, fracture anything in that locker room. And if they think that somebody is loyal to John Fox or whatnot, maybe they'd want to just wait.
See, and that drives me insane. Not you, but what you're saying. These guys are fighting for their careers. If you don't want to go out and play hard, then I don't want you part of my program anyway. It's time to...
Yeah.
I know how you guys all say this is how the McCaskies run. It's time to change the BS way things have gotten done. They haven't hired a good coach in how long? It's time to walk in. It's time to step up and go, guess what? It didn't work, and we're going to find the best damn football coach out there, and we're fixing this thing.
Well,
now.
I think, you know, a couple assumptions here. I think we're operating under the assumption that Ryan is going to get to pick the next head coach. I think it's a fair assumption.
I think it's 100% he gets to pick it.
And I wouldn't disagree with you there, but let's just establish that. So what do we know about Ryan, okay? The way he operated in the search for Trubisky last year. They made up their minds in October that they needed a quarterback and they were going to go find him. Who's to say that he is not spending the next eight
That's
weeks
true.
behind the scenes, figuring out who his guy is. And I think if we get to January 1st, and let's say they do keep Fox on all the way till Black Monday, I don't think we're looking at another 18-day coaching search or whatever it was the last time around. Right.
That's true.
I think he moves quickly because he's going to have time to figure this out, to really look into guys' backgrounds. And again, understanding that Mitch is the number one priority, figure out who's going to get the most out of him.
We saw him watch Mitchell Trubisky in a hoodie. No one even knew he was there watching him. So I think that's a really good point, that he could be out searching for the next head coach. But I think, as you said, the number one priority is Mitchell Trubisky. So you probably need to find an offensive-minded coach that could maybe play call or at least have an offensive coordinator in mind that the coach could bring along with them that could have the best interest for Mitch as well.
And as Rich said earlier, you know, we kind of knew before the season this was going to be a season with John Fox in the hot seat. Ryan Pace understands how this business works. So Ryan Pace might have known, you know, in August when he's building his team, like, you know, this might not be, you know, if things don't go well, I'm going to have to make a coaching change. So he's probably been thinking about this for a while. And again, as Rich said and Shea said, all goes to Trubisky. That's the number one priority for Ryan Pace. Number one priority then for the McCaskey family, too, to make sure they do everything they can to help this guy become a franchise quarterback.
And I think you probably want to keep Vic Fangio in place if you can. That's the one piece of the puzzle that I think as a fan, a reporter, that you would want to keep.
I disagree.
Since when? You have been number one Vic Fangio fan all season.
I love him. He's great. But guess what? If I hire Rich Campbell as the new head coach and he says, you know what, I love Vic, but I've got a guy who's a damn good defensive coordinator and he's the guy I want on my staff, that's the way I go.
Sure, but I think the offensive coordinator needs to be the number one priority before a defensive coordinator. Keep Vic Fangio in place and worry about the offensive coordinator and a new head coach that actually knows the system and knows what to do and knows what to do with a young rookie quarterback.
The possibility of Vic as the interim in this hypothetical, if John Fox is dismissed early, that's really interesting to me because we've all wondered as he has, you know, established this defense in Chicago and we look at his record, what would he be as a head coach? He's 59, and you could look at some other guys, Mike Zimmer, Bruce Arians, who have gotten their chance a little bit later in their career. What would Vic do in that little window? But I'm with you. You know, he's a free agent himself. His contract is up after this year. If he's not the head coach in Chicago, I think he's going elsewhere. And there would have to be some type of relationship with whoever is brought in to keep Vic in place. And that would be in the absence of other head coaching opportunities.
Now, Jim Harbaugh is the head coach.
Oh, stop.
I just don't think he's coming here.
You wouldn't want him here.
Do you think the McCaskies are going to pay Jim Harbaugh?
I do think
$10 million.
Hold on a second.
Let's just say $10 million.
This franchise, right now, if they put it on the market, they could easily get $3 billion. Easy.
Okay.
$3 billion. What is $10 million in a big picture?
But just as history has shown us, the McCaskies are not going to pay John Fox $5 million, Harbaugh $10 million. They're not going to do it. And quite frankly, I don't think Harbaugh has really proved himself as of late either. I don't think he's the number one priority when it comes to a coaching search.
I'm with Shea on this.
I don't think he's the best solution.
That he's not your quarterback guy.
Quarterbacks he has right now in Michigan and what a mess it is. That offense is a mess.
And if you look at developing NFL quarterbacks, I mean, Colin Kaepernick is the example here, and you have all kinds of questions about what they were allowing Kaepernick to do in that offense, how structured it was, and how he was able to sort of play and use his athleticism. I think you're going with a more established
Sean Payton
NFL guy. Well, look below Payton.
He's not getting out of New Orleans now, I don't think.
Yeah,
they're playing.
Yeah. Look below Payton to Pete Carmichael, who has been in that quarterback room and now in that offensive staff since 2006 when Breeze got there. The questions about Carmichael are, can he command the room? You know, does he have that head coach presence?
We heard that about Mark Trestman, and it didn't work out well.
Exactly, no, exactly. And if you remember, he interviewed for the Bears job in 2013 when Trestman got it. And what you heard about Carmichael at the time, you can go back and read that, and you go, this sounds familiar. This sounds familiar. Good mind. Does he have that presence? I'll just say this. Ryan Pace knows him extremely well. They were on the same staff together for 9 years in New Orleans. Any type of dot connecting is going to start there. And if we're talking about Ryan working behind the scenes, surely that's something.
About Josh McDaniels.
Well, I mean, now we could start listing names, right? I mean, that's an obvious one. Frank Reich is an obvious one.
Are you guys hung up that it has to be an offensive coach? Because
yes.
I'm not.
I am, personally.
Well, I think if you're bringing a defensive coach, the number one question then is who's going to be his offensive coordinator.
No question.
I think if you look, the whole, you know, what's the cliche, the leader of men mantra, the guy you want running your franchise. And I think there's enough Bears fans that, you know, you look at John Fox before he came here and you looked at his record, you can make a fair argument. even if, let's say, you bring in a guy like John Fox now, like, he's been around, he's had success, you bring him in as a veteran, and then you bring an offensive coordinator. I think this is such a copycat league. Ryan Pace knows what's happening in L.A. right now with Sean McVay. You look at the offensive coordinators that are going to be available. There's some pretty good ones out there that have had some pretty good teams. You can go find a young offensive coordinator and see if it works. This is what the Bears have done. You know, Lovey was the defensive coordinator for a long time. They bring him in. Mark Trestman was the outside-the-box guy. Then they bring John Fox in, the veteran guy. Then they just go to the next one and try to find the next one.
Matt Patricia intrigues me.
I just think it's important that Trubisky trusts his head coach, especially in this time. I mean, he just gets into the league. He's going to need somebody
that he can trust. You get the right guy, whatever he is. John Harbaugh was a special teams coach. Mike Ditka was a special team. You will trust the right guy. It doesn't matter what he coaches.
But you cannot risk having an Adam Gase situation again, where the offensive coordinator is this sharp guy who comes in and starts to get Mitch rolling and then leaves because he's on that rocket ship. He has to be here for continuity. And so I think automatically you're ruling out the defensive side of the ball. And I get it, Cap. I get what you're saying. But you need the offensive guy to stay. And there's no guarantee he will otherwise.
Because Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator. Yeah, he's the right head coach.
The priority is Mitchell Trubisky. So the priority, if you're Ryan Pace,
should be the offense. Best quarterback in football has a defensive head coach.
Come on.
Better go hire his coordinator.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe Josh McDaniels.
I do think.
John Gruden.
I think it's a rare case, though, when you get those guys.
Why not?
I don't think John Gruden is going to leave his Cush TV job to come coach a disgruntled Bears team.
And a flawed Bears team.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's my
he's
point with Harbaugh as well.
There's no reason for him to come to Chicago. No reason.
There's no reason.
Well, I think Harbaugh's a nice narrative, but the one thing with Harbaugh is the sum of stuff that happened with him in San Francisco and Jed York and Trent Baalke. Do you think that the McCaskey family wants someone like that? Even if it's Jim Harbaugh, even if it's their Jim Harbaugh, you know there's going to be some fraction because that's just how he is. And I don't think that they're going to want that in the building with everything that's gone on with this franchise over the years. Even if it's that guy, I don't think they want anybody ruffling anybody's feathers. I think they're the type of people that just want everything to be as easy as possible.
If we got to the end of this and it's Pete Carmichael, we'd all go, yeah, no duh. Like I said, 9 years together with Pace in New Orleans.
Yeah,
he's been in with Breeze that entire
time.
It's very easy to see why he would end up there.
He makes sense.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. Also, you had an article about Trubisky and growing pains. I was reading Greg Gabriel the other day, Sunday, and he said, please stop with the narrative, not you, anybody, that Trubisky's this or that. This kid is special. What is your take on where Trubisky is right now?
I think he looks like a rookie who's in his fifth start. And this play that we're showing right now is a perfect example of this, where he has to get rid of this ball to Josh Bellamy quickly. And he sees a corner trapping Bellamy and doesn't think he's open. And you can talk to a number of people who understand the quarterback position, understand the differences between college and the pro game. What is covered in college is open in the NFL. And you've got to be able to process those differences. You got to be able to process the smaller windows that we're seeing here. Trubisky is playing very cautiously. And so this, I think, gets to the bigger issue here. We hear from John Fox, okay, taking these sacks is better than throwing picks. Trubisky's now up to 16 sacks in 5 starts. It's a sack per attempt ratio of 12.2%. It's the worst among qualified NFL passers, okay? So he's taking a lot of sacks. Is he gun-shy? Is he developing bad habits? I'm not saying he is. It's something we have to continue to ask as we go through the final 7 games.
Yeah, John Fox is just so afraid of taking any risks. He doesn't want to turn the ball over. And taking 5 sacks obviously is not ideal, but I'd rather have that than Mike Glennon throwing a pick in the red zone every other week. I mean,
But we're seeing why Ryan Pace didn't want to play Mitchell Trubisky.
He didn't have a
choice, though.
He's learning. I mean, next year we're going to see a much different Mitchell Trubisky, regardless of who the head coach is.
Every snap he takes is important for his development. Even when he takes a sack, it's a learning experience for him every step of the way. And I think that you see the throws, you think to yourself, okay, that's a special arm that makes that throw. You know, they talk about the overtime throw in Baltimore over and over again. I think he made a couple on Sunday. Dontrell Inman, the touchdown of Josh Bellamy was a nice play. So you see those here and there, and you see the athletic abilities that he has, but you wonder what kind of shackles are around him in terms of what can he do. And then, I mean, look at this receiving core.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just brutal.
That's the other problem.
You got nobody getting open. I mean, look, credit to Dontrell Inman. I mean, he had a nice game. But the fact that a guy who couldn't even get in the active lineup with the Chargers is now suddenly your best receiver says a lot about what the Bears kind of have built around Trubisky. I mean, that was a miss by the Bears personnel department heading into the season. Look, they couldn't predict that Meredith and goes down. Kevin White, I mean, you don't want to say you could have predicted it, but they just we don't know what he's capable of until he has the type of receivers that you want.
Some weapons around him.
And I would say this about Mitch, to Greg Gabriel's point, is that I think he's showing that eventually he'll be able to win from the pocket. And that's the biggest part of this. That's why the Bears didn't want Deshaun Watson, because you understand all the perils that come for a guy who plays outside the pocket and needs to play outside the pocket. I think eventually Mitch will be able to play from the pocket. He'll be able to go through his reads. And I think one of the things we're seeing up at Halas Hall every week is that he does have the mentality, he's got the character, the work ethic, and those intangibles, that makeup, to push through this so that when he does have the coach in place and he does have the receivers in place and he does have the experience, that it is going to trend upward.
This is nothing like the adversity he went through in Chapel Hill. I mean, he had to sit there behind a guy that he knew he was better than as a thrower, and Marquise Williams had to sit there, and then he obviously played last year, and that wasn't even a great Tar Heels team last year. Also, look what North Carolina has been doing this year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're horrible
right.
this
Awful.
Year without him. So, look, he's just learning as he goes, and I think this is all good for him. I mean,
it's part of the process.
It'd be better if he was, lighting it up the way that Watson was, but that's just not the way the Bears are right now.
I also think it's nice that in speaking to a lot of these guys in the locker room at practice and whatnot, all of them have said week in and week out, every week he commands a huddle better. Every week he's becoming more and more of a leader. And I think, what else can you ask for? Sure, he's learning in-game situations, but as far as taking control of a huddle and taking control of a locker room, it seems that he's constantly trying to develop in that area as well.
I like the Josh Sitton story.
That was a good one. I wish he had told us.
I know.
We don't get the luxury of talking to him.
The guy couldn't give us the time of day. But he got on the phone with the Packers media. All right.
Right.
That's fine. I'll say this. It's fair to criticize Trubisky. It's fair to understand what he's not seeing, when he's not on time, when he's holding on to it too long. One of the things that the Bears are continuing to emphasize with him is don't be afraid to check the ball down. Don't wait through the progression for the absolute best outcome. If you still have a good outcome with the check down, go ahead and check it. And I don't think he's quite processing that up to speed like he eventually
All right.
will.
What is the deal with Kyle Long? He played one snap on a field goal. And then Fox, if you listen to his postgame, John Fox said, look, of course he was healthier. We wouldn't have dressed him. And then when pressed, why didn't he play more? We wanted to go with a healthy player. So is he healthy or is he not healthy? Why was he not playing?
The way I read this, and we talked about this in the green room back there, was they had 6 injured players to fill the inactive list. Sanchez, the inactive third quarterback, being the 7th and final guy. I think if they didn't have those 6 other guys, that
Kyle could have been inactive.
But he wasn't. And also, one of those inactive guys was Tom Compton, who would have been the guard to replace him. So not only was Kyle injured, his replacement was injured as well. And what Fox, I think, clumsily explained was that Kyle's gnarly finger couldn't withstand a full game's worth of work, but he could fill in if needed. He could play on special teams in the kick protection unit. He just has such a terrible way with words that he doesn't explain
this well.
But we
haven't seen a healthy Kyle Long at all this
Since
year.
Since 2015.
We have not seen a healthy. But why can't we just hear that from John Fox? Look, he's not 100%. Here's what we did. We put him in. I mean, it's just never, ever transparent when it comes to John Fox and this Bears program. And it's so incredibly frustrating for fans, for reporters, for everyone around this team, because you don't know what to believe. You never know what to believe. And quite frankly, a lot of times when these injury reports come out, or when they tell us limited, unavailable, didn't practice, might be ready to go, half the time you take it with a grain of salt because it's never accurate.
Yeah, that's the problem. I mean, he started with the Kevin White thing from 2015. And
he's day to day. Oh, yeah. About 3 years from now.
I'll say this. I think the subtext to this whole Kyle Long conversation is his shoulder, which he did not have surgically repaired. To this point, it doesn't look like Kyle has been affected by that. And
see, I'd shut him down today and say we're fixing everything.
That'd be interesting.
That'd be
but you saw what happened without him on Sunday against the Packers. They couldn't run it. And they had protection problems, too, with Grasso in its center.
All right. Nikola Mirotic and Bobby Portis are in the same building again today, and they still have not spoken to each other. Will they? Is there anybody on the Bulls that can get these two together? Will this high school spat continue? And LeBron James took his shots at the Knicks, and the Knicks, none too pleased, including Enes Kanter, who wasn't happy with the NBA's monarchy.
Sports Talk with Sizzle. Crank up the heat and turn on STL. On NBC Sports Chicago, host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table in a half hour on the topics that are trending with our teams.
We got the most mismanaged basketball team in the history of the world.
Which franchise made the gutsiest draft day move?
I think Pac wanted to do this, and he finally got his way.
Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Obviously, Nico and Bobby have not talked. You know, Bobby talked about that yesterday. But, you know, Nico has had interaction with the other players. And, you know, we'll continue to work on it. You know, Nico's going to continue to come in here and get his work in. You know, continue to ramp up his workload. And, you know, hopefully be cleared for more court on-court activity soon. But, you know, to this point, no, there's been no communication with Bobby and Nico.
If only somebody could get those two in a room and say, guys, let's work this out, or somebody or both of you are not going to be here. Maybe the head coach. Who do you guys hold responsible?
Can you imagine if this happened? First of all, this never would have happened if Thibodeau was here. But can you imagine how he would have handled it? I mean, these two would be talking.
Correct.
So I think, I mean, you obviously know Pax and Gar in terms of how that structure works. And I wonder, because Hoiberg is just not the type of guy who's going to get into something like this. But that's got to come top down. You can't have these two guys not playing. The weird thing is, though, is so it seems like the players are kind of on Bobby Portis' side
100%.
Of things. And, if you're looking at the Bulls, which of these two guys are going to even be involved with this team next year or the year after?
Bobby,
year
maybe. After? Portis, or so that, Nico, no
so
chance.
So go from there and move on. Well,
what does that matter? You even hear Fred Hoiberg say, obviously these two haven't talked. No, not obviously. Okay, we're all grown-ups here. Let's just say, hypothetically, my boyfriend and I get in a fight, and it's his fault. Maybe the narrative we've been told is that Nikola started this maybe a little bit. That's what we've been told. The media has been told. I wasn't there. I don't know. However, if someone starts this, and this is what happens, they play a physical sport. You can't sit and talk it out, figure out how to work together. You don't have to like
but
each other.
But there's a big difference between you and Jordan getting
so
into
it. So Jordan and I get in a fight, and he initiates it. Now, we're not pushing and shoving. Let me make that very clear.
All right.
No one's pushing and shoving. But he better come to me and be like, look, you know, I appreciate the apology, but let's just figure out how to live together, and let's get along, and let's work it out later.
Yeah,
that
but
is
the
what you need
big difference
to
than that and getting your face caved
that's
in.
That's what I'm saying. He took his livelihood away.
He
busted his face up.
For a couple weeks, okay? He took his livelihood away for a couple of weeks. He's going to be able to play eventually. These two play a physical sport. This is not the first time. You guys work in football. This is not the first time you've seen two people get in an altercation.
I would say this.
It's called being a grown-up.
I would say this. I would blame Portis because he threw the punch.
For what? He apologized. He reached out. He texted and he's called and he's trying to communicate with him.
He should have punched the guy.
He punched the guy in the face.
He broke his jaw.
And if that happens in any workplace in America, the guy's fired and he's going to jail for it.
Every other workplace in America is not physical and you don't prepare for physical activity day in and day out.
And Fred Miller got into it where Fred hit Olin in the head with a weight, 25 stitches across the top of Olin's bald head. Fred Miller gets a broken jaw out of it, and they ended up being able to play together on the offensive line.
You don't have to like one another, but you have to figure out a way to make it work. I am not
but
saying it's right
that does this mean that there is no leadership on the Bulls?
Yes.
That's what it speaks
100%.
To, sure. Sure. Now, I just don't blame Mirotic for having this sort of stalemate here. I mean, he's got to be able to come to grips with the fact that this guy knocked him out, crushed his face, and is still playing for the team.
Okay, fine, but he was suspended, and he tried to apologize to him. So what do? You go out there, and those two play the same position. Fight for your spot.
You know, if you
show
told
him you're
me
the better guy.
He had a black eye. I get it. You break my face where they're talking about facial surgery. My career could be affected by this. I'm going
to
be out.
So you're not going to speak to anybody? That's the right way to handle
it? He's going
to
be out for 2 months. It's just, boy, oh, boy. I think I'm the most forgiving guy in the world. If Rich smacked me and I
would never
had my face crushed in, That's a hard one to get over.
It's a hard one to get over.
I'm not saying
blame
he needs
him.
To get over it.
I think
I'm
you are.
Saying you. No, I'm saying he doesn't need to get over it. He can be mad. He doesn't have to like Bobby Portis. They don't need to go out for drinks on the weekends, but they need to figure out a way to work together because they're both getting paid a lot of money to go in and do your work and talk to each other.
Who should be the person that takes the two of them and says, okay, this BS stops. We're going in a room right now. Nico, Bobby, and me. Is that Gar? Is that John? Is that Jerry? Is that Michael Reinsdorf? Is that Fred Hoiberg?
It should be Fred. It should.
I don't think Fred has the ability to do that.
I agree with you. So then it goes. Then it goes to Paxton. I mean, you look at this team too. Laurie Markkanen, why doesn't he do it? He's the star of the team. He's the best player. He's the future. He Mitch Trubisky would handle it if something
no
was
shot. I know.
But that's the problem with this team is they don't – I mean, Bobby Portis and Mirotić were the veterans.
Yeah.
These were the guys that have been here for a while. Mirotić was supposed to be the last guy announced in the starting lineup. That's how terrible this team is. I mean, these were the guys that the young guys are supposed to look to, and it's awful that it happened. And I also don't blame Mirotić for the way he's handling it right now. But Hoiberg's got to do something.
He's
the head coach.
There's no one else that's with them as much as Hoiberg.
John Paxson.
Sure, but John Paxson isn't coaching these guys every single day.
No, but he's the boss, and John is the guy with the fiery, tough persona who can actually walk in the room and go, okay, this nonsense stops.
Then shoot him a text.
You don't have to live together. You don't have to dine together. You got to play together.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying.
You did get me excited about the idea of Jerry walking into practice and talking to the owner of the team.
It'd be unbelievable.
It's a distraction until it's not anymore. And Fred continues to get questions about it all the time. And even he, I think, reached sort of a breaking point today. But what do you expect? How do you expect this? It's not going away.
If you're Fred Hoiberg and you
are
clearly on a scolding hot seat, right? I mean, wouldn't you see this as an opportunity to do something that would make you look good?
No question.
That's true.
It's a great point.
You bring the two of them together, and everyone looks at you as being the guy to do it.
It's all such an awkward situation, too, seeing Mikola in the background of, like, video, and they're all working out and shooting.
And he's riding a bike.
Yeah, it's so awkward.
It's
like,
really
sit down
bizarre.
And have a conversation.
All right, last night, the Knicks had the Cavs right where they want them, 20-plus down in the hole, but the Cavs roared back. But the big story was LeBron and the Knicks exchanging words after LeBron said they should have drafted Dennis Smith Jr., who's in Dallas, instead of Frank Ntilikina, a European guard that they drafted. LeBron and Enes Kanter right there going at it. And after the game, there was a war of words. They continued the war of words in their respective locker rooms.
You ain't coming to my house playing that water bottle flip game again. You know what I mean? I don't care who you are, king, what do you call yourself, king, queen, princess, whatever you are. You know what? We're going to fight. And nobody out there going to punk us.
Kind of said, and I'm going to quote you can call yourself king, queen, princess.
Yeah, I know. I heard that. That's corny. He can call what? What is it? Say it again.
You can call yourself king, queen, princess. You're not going to punk us.
Well, I'm the king, my wife is the queen, and my daughter is the princess. So we got all three covered.
What happened with you and Enes and Frank on that play there?
Nothing.
Making dinner reservations?
Never that. You know, nothing. Nothing. I mean, we got the win. That's. I'm not going to say that guy's name again. Anyways, next question, please.
Get him, LeBron.
I'm not going to say that guy's name again.
I thought it was awesome.
I'll give Kanter a lot of credit. He goes, I don't care who that guy is. Best player in the world, Mount Rushmore player. I'm not taking his BS. And I'm a LeBron fan. I like LeBron. But I love that Kanter showed that.
I like the
kid going after LeBron a little bit too there. Why not? But I also didn't necessarily have a problem with what LeBron said. He was blasting Phil with that comment about
he
Dennis
hates
Smith.
Phil Jackson.
Yeah, so he was ribbing the Knicks. I like that. I mean, LeBron's the number one. He's the face of the NBA. He should be allowed to kind of make comments like that. But then as you said, I like that the Knicks were standing up for themselves too.
No question about it. Hey, thanks for listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Remember to watch the show weekdays on CSN and visit csnchicago.com for previous episodes of the podcast and all the latest sports news and highlights.